And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Metrospective Podcast. I'm Ted Berg, joined on the line, as always, by the Athletics Mets beat writer Tim Britton. Tim, how's it going?
Pretty good, Ted. It's weird that it's March and like we're not getting ready for college basketball. It's weird that they decided to cancel the NCAA tournament again. That is my understanding of it, that it is not being played, and no one is talking about it at all. It's generating zero excitement across the country, and that's that.
That's funny. That's a you have flipped the script on me, because I was hoping to at least just mention that the enormous success of the Georgetown Hoyas in the Big East tournament, steamrolling their opponents and led by Patrick Ewing and heading into the NCAA tournament, squeezing out perhaps some of those bubble teams, and what a tough time it must be to pull for one of those clubs, forced out of the NCAA tournament by the upstart Georgetown Hoyas.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny because for those who don't know, I assume everyone knows at this point. I assume just based off my personality, everyone knows at this point.
You wear a scarlet D around your neck. It's like the I'm a fan of Duke basketball. You have to just admit it to people.
Right. I am an alumnus of Duke University. And this is our first time since 1995 not being in the tournament. It's only the second time since 83, I believe, not being in the tournament. It was very strange. Like I told myself going into the ACC tournament, like, oh, like this will be fun, 'cause it's kind of like, you're betting with house money at this point. Like, you know, no one expects them to do anything. And if they win, it's cool. And then like 3 minutes into the Boston College game, that they ended up winning by 35 points, I was like, this sucks. I hate having to play the Tuesday game at the ACC tournament. That's not even a thing. Boston College isn't even an ACC program. So
you just hear like the smugness in your voice of the Duke. Like, it's like, 'cause you're not like that when we talk about the Mets, but as soon as you get to talking about Duke basketball, it's just like a whole different tone. It's horrible. I don't want to talk about it anymore. We got to move on. Tim, you've got, we've got a bunch ahead. Mostly we have some over-unders regarding the Mets pitching staff that I want to get to, but we also have a couple of reader questions we're going to hit a little bit later. Tell me what we're going to do today.
Yeah, so, you know, in Mets camp the last week or so, there hasn't been a whole lot going on. There was, like, one particularly long plate appearance that I think was the most noteworthy spring training plate appearance in Mets history. But which, like, you know, it took up.
What about Jordani Valdespin getting hit in a rough spot by Justin Verlander with no cup on?
Was that spring? I wasn't covering the Mets at that point.
Yeah,
I assume that had happened in real baseball.
No, it was a spring training game and a direct shot, and he did not mince words when asked where the ball hit him. And you know, just everything about Valdespin was such a show. So yeah, that was it. But I'll take the Luis Guillorme at that. That was spectacular. He started 0-2.
I know. I mean, like the thing about that is, like, Jordan Hicks did a pretty good job. He didn't. It took him 22 pitches to throw four balls.
He did not give in.
It wasn't even a full count until like the 18th pitch or something. So it was really 0-2 and 1-2 for a lot of that. And you know, Guillorme, you see the first two pitches that Hicks threw him, which is a high 100 mile an hour fastball, and then a pretty sharp 90 mile an hour slider. And like, if you go back and watch the first two pitches, your assumption is that Luis Guillorme is about to strike out in 10 seconds.
I don't think that this is true anymore, but I think that if that happened 15 years ago, it would viably buy Luis Guillorme like three more years of major league career, but based on like the old school GMs who were just like, this guy never gives an at bat away. And then like, even when he's 37 and can't do anything anymore, people just like still keep Luis Guillorme around because of that one spring training at bat.
I mean, that was like Alex Cora had, what, the 17-pitch home run when he was on the Dodgers, 17 or 18 pitches.
Classic example. Does not give an at-bat away, except for most of them.
Doesn't give an at-bat away. It's going to be a future manager.
Yeah.
So you got to have him in the clubhouse for a while.
With not much going on. You presented to me what I thought would be a fun idea. And there's a gambling ties to March Madness too, so we can say it's topical. You have prepared a number of over-unders. I happen to love over-unders. How do you want to do this? You want to hit me with them and then I'll give you what I think and then you correct me?
We can do that, and then you can, you know, I think I've got like 10 to 12 here. I don't know how many we'll get through, but you can always choose one that you like to give to me that I can give you the correct answer and then you can disagree with.
Okay. I mean, we could just trade off. I just want to make clear that you made, because I don't want to take credit for your over-unders. You made these. So I can say, like, number one, Mets pitchers who qualify for the ERA title, over-under 1.5. Tell me, what is it? What should I say? If this was a bet, where should my money go?
Yeah. So I should clarify that qualifying for the ERA title means you throw one inning per game played for the team. Mm-hmm. So that'd be 162 innings this year.
An increasingly rare feat.
Yeah. I should have done research and looked up like how many pitchers qualified for it in 2019. The Mets, I believe, only had the one who did last year in Jacob DeGrom, who threw 68 innings in 60 games. So it was a 60 inning cutoff. So I put the over under 1.5 because, you know, I think like DeGrom feels like a pretty good bet for that.
I mean, in 2019, unless he gets hurt, and then we have like, you know, 30 emergency sadness podcasts, and it's a whole different. Everyone will forget about this one.
Right. In 2019, by the way, they had three because it was DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
So I think DeGrom's the given, and then it's basically like, who else do you think is going to get to 162? I think Carlos Carrasco, just by virtue of getting a slow start to spring training, feels less likely to get there.
Even if he were coming out of the. And I like Carrasco a lot, and a guy who gives you 140 to 150 innings is really valuable. But if you look at his history, I don't think you can count on him giving you more than 150 innings.
And then, you know, Taijuan Walker is a guy who hasn't thrown a full season since, mm-hmm, I believe, 2017. So I think that would be a big ask for him off of it. You know, he pitched a full season last year, the full abbreviated season last year. He was healthy all of last season, but, you know, hasn't built up the innings to get to 162 comfortably, I think. David Peterson is not a great bet because he might be replaced by Noah Syndergaard halfway through the season, and B, has never thrown more than 129 innings, I believe, in a competitive professional season, and threw, you know, 50 or so last year. So that's a pretty big jump. So I think it really comes down, like this question is basically like, do you think Marcus Stroman will throw 162 innings off of a year in which he threw zero? And Stroman, he's thrown 180 or more three different times in his career. He threw 184 in 2019 between Toronto and New York, and he's said he feels like he can go a full 200. So I think that will be interesting to see if he gets there. I'm going to be pessimistic because it's March 16th, and we don't know what any pitchers are going to be capable of this year. I don't think this is like a poor reflection on how I feel about Stroman's season, but I'm going to take the under because I think that's just like the realistic thing to do.
All right, I'll take that bet because I'll take the over. I feel like I think Stroman's going to get there.
Yeah, I mean, like,
I think he has enough history of durability, and I'm enough of an optimist. I guess this probably has to do with whether your powerhouse basketball team is playing in the tournament or watching from home, or whether your recently pitiable college basketball team has made a unbelievable Cinderella run to the tournament. Might shape your outlook on this one.
I mean, is Creighton even in the Big East?
Creighton is apparently. Creighton's good, and they have.
I know. Creighton is very good.
And I could talk about this. I just it I don't understand why, like, Georgetown needs to be, like, constantly trounced by, like, teams like Butler and Creighton. Like, why can't you recruit better than these? I'm sorry. It's just, I don't want to talk about this.
Wait. One quick one. What if I told Ted while he was at Georgetown the following sentence, what would be the weirdest thing? Georgetown ended its, what was it, 7-year tournament drought, 8-year tournament drought, something like that.
Yeah, it's 20.
In the Big East tournament final by defeating Creighton in front of a crowd of no one at Madison Square Garden, led by head coach Patrick Ewing. If I told you that 15 years ago, like, what is the weirdest part of that sentence?
I mean, the Ewing thing I would have bought, you know, but I think Creighton. I think it would have been like, wait, what? Creighton's in, isn't that in Nebraska? Like, what are they doing in the Big East? Is Creighton in Nebraska? I think they're in Nebraska.
It's in Omaha.
Yeah. I don't know. They got to change the names. It's time for a new. Why is it the East if you have a team in Nebraska? That's as central as you can get. And there's teams in Chicago. That's not the East. Whatever. Syracuse ruined the whole conference by abdicating and forfeiting the rivalry, in my opinion. Jacob DeGrom, will he have over or under 300 strikeouts? Tim, that is a very bold number for an over-under.
Really high number. He has not gotten there. I think it's his career high.
He is throwing 102 in spring training games, but
right.
300 is, that's a rare feat. I mean, not, you know, I a couple of guys have done it in recent years, right? You know, it was like the Randy Johnson, Nolan Ryan, Roger Clemens threshold for a while, and it kind of went away. But I think in recent years, there have been a couple of guys to get to 300. I want to say, did Verlander do it a couple of years ago?
I'm not sure. I know Cole, Sale, okay, and I believe Scherzer have all gotten
Scherzer,
there.
Yeah.
Actually, Verlander got to 300 even in 2019.
Okay, yeah.
DeGrom's career high is 269, which he got in 2018, and that was in 217 innings. I'd be really surprised if Jacob DeGrom threw 217 innings this season. I think that would be, I would definitely take the under on that. You know, since then, his strikeout rate has gone up pretty precipitously. It's gone up across the game pretty dramatically, even in that short window, but his was all the way up to 38% last year. And if you know, he struck out 104 guys in 68 innings, you prorate that out to 200 innings and he would get to 300. And so that's why I said it there. And the other thing is he's got a pitcher in the lineup now that he didn't have last year. Mm-hmm. That's someone who's easier to strike out. I wonder what percentage of plate appearances this season Jacob DeGrom will strike out the opposing pitcher. Like if that's like 70% of opposing pitchers he strikes out or what, how high that can go. 300 is really high. I'm going to take the under more because of an innings concern. Like it would not surprise me if Jacob DeGrom struck out another 38% of opposing hitters. If he, you know, maybe he gets to 40 with the opposing pitcher in there. But I don't know that I feel less confident about him throwing 200 plus innings to just get the bulk of batters that you need to strike out that many guys. So I will again be the pessimist and take the under.
Yeah, it's funny that you made that one of the over-unders. I had actually been looking at DeGrom's stats and wondering, like, what is the feat that this guy hasn't done yet that is within reason? And 300 strikeouts was one I settled on. Like, I don't think it's outlandish to hope he can do it if he's throwing harder somehow at 33 than he ever did before and if his strikeout rate keeps going up. But it's just, I would never put money on it. You know, it's such an unlikely feat. I mean, it's and DeGrom has been so healthy too, knock on wood, but like there's always this looming injury risk with all pitchers on top of everything else that I could just never say like, oh yeah, he's going to go over 300 strikeouts.
And that transitions well to our next one.
I'll tell you, if Jacob DeGrom gets to 300 strikeouts this year, and this is a debate for a later time, and I think that for a lot of people probably already settled, but I think if 300 strikeout year gets Jacob DeGrom, then it's like he's a no doubt Hall of Famer after that.
No doubt's really tough because
no doubt. I mean, then he's a no doubt because then he's Sandy Koufax in my book. Then he's a guy who's had like six dominant years.
Right. It's funny to look at like Johan Santana versus Sandy Koufax. No one is as good as Koufax's peak, but Santana's is like similar when you compare him to mm-hmm. his league. It's just so strange to me that like Koufax is every, like, he is like the pitcher for so many, for people of that generation. He's the guy.
Right.
And Santana did not get 5% of the vote in his first year. And part of that is like he didn't win the Cy Young in 2005. When Bartolo won,
right.
And Santana should have won. And he didn't win it in 2008 when he had a reasonably good case. I think Lincecum won that year. And that if those two votes go differently and Johan Santana has four Cy Youngs or he has three in a row, it's a totally different thing. And would have made it easier, I think, for a guy like Jacob deGrom, whose counting stats aren't going to be there. He's going to have a weird case, but one that I think voters by that point will be more open to.
Right, because like right now he has 70 career wins, which is just right. like not what you think of as a Hall of Fame starting pitcher. I just think like he's been so dominant. I feel like it's like that peak type thing, and I would expect he'll. I mean, again, this is very hopeful thinking, but I would expect he'll have a graceful decline whenever that comes. And so maybe it's not a debate at all by the time the end of his career comes around. Maybe it's obvious. Right now, he doesn't even have the years to really, I think, be on the ballot automatically. But to me, another big year makes him a Hall of Fame caliber pitcher.
He has fewer career wins right now than Babe Ruth.
Yeah. But it's a different game. It's a different game. He pitched for the Mets. Babe Ruth didn't have to play for the Mets.
Didn't get to face the Mets. The next one I've got here. It's DeGrom adjacent. It's basically about DeGrom. The maximum velocity that a Mets pitcher will have on a single pitch in 2021, is it over or under 102.7 miles per hour? A number that I have plucked out of the air, and not because it was the peak velocity that DeGrom threw last season.
Over.
You think he's going over?
I don't know. I mean, it's so the velocity. It's so like again, like 102.7. I hate to just keep emphasizing how old I am, but like I remember in the late 90s when you'd be like, oh man, this guy throws like 93, 94, so check the radar gun. And now it's like, oh, do you think he's gonna hit 104 today? It just feels like DeGrom just feels like he's throwing harder every year, right? Like, I don't know. I don't see why, if he could throw 102.7 last year and he's throwing 102 in spring training now, I don't see why he's not going to be able to dial it up for like 105 come the seventh inning of a game in July.
Yeah. Like I remember, Ken Griffey Jr. baseball for N64. You'd play that and the best pitcher like Randy Johnson threw 106 miles an hour. That was the peak that anyone got to. Like the Randy
game.
Johnson had the super fastball in the video game. And I remember laughing at that then because it's like Randy Johnson threw 97 or something. Like you're adding 10% to his fastball for the game's purposes. And now you've got guys like Aroldis Chapman and Jordan Hicks, who I believe have thrown 105.
Yeah, I know Chapman's license plate, I think, is like 105.1 because I think that was when he threw it, it was the record.
So you've got relievers who have hit that mark. It's funny that DeGrom is doing this years after Noah Syndergaard like made it a point that he wanted to throw as hard as possible. And here's like the unassuming other guy in the rotation just doing all of those things.
Yeah, I mean, would it shock you if Syndergaard threw a 103 mile an hour pitch at some point this year? Like, I know he's had Tommy John surgery and he's still coming back, but like, would that blow your mind?
That would surprise me, yeah, because it's just because of the injury. Like, if he were healthy all through this, if we're building up, DeGrom,
have you seen the shirtless Instagram pitching? He looks like he's healthy. Like, he looks like that's a healthy man.
He's always looked that way, though.
Right.
Well, since getting into the majors. With DeGrom, it is just remarkable, the steady progression. And the reason like I'm tempted to go with over is because early in spring training, I think I asked this question, but it might have been someone else. You forget on these Zoom things if it was you or someone else, whether he thought he could sustain that that level of velocity over a full 162-game season that he showed last year. And he was just kind of like, Yeah, I think so. And just like confidently dismissive of the concept that it might be harder. And so he's kind of in that like he's entered that zone where you have to he has to do something that makes you believe he can't do the next thing.
Right.
It's kind of, it reminds me of like David Ortiz late in his career. Like, can David Ortiz be David the best Ortiz. Hitter in baseball
yeah.
at 40? Sure.
I remember,
why not?
I remember talking to David Ortiz that year, and I did, it was like some phone interview. I don't know, he was pitching something, I'm sure. And I asked him about it. I was like, how are you going to retire when you're still hitting this well? And he's like, bro, I know how to hit. Like, it's just like, I'm not going to stop being able to hit. It's just, I'm just bored of being this good at hitting. Like, I know how to hit. Like, it's not going to go away. And I was thinking about that when you were talking about DeGrom. It's just like, he's just like, he just, I feel at this point, he just knows how to keep throwing ridiculously hard and striking tons of people out. It's cool. Good guy to have on your team.
Right. You want to go to the Syndergaard one? Because that
yeah.
we've talked about that. So Noah Syndergaard starts over under 10.5, which is a number I picked because over the course of his career, he's averaged 11 starts after the All-Star break. Usually he makes 13, but he had the 1 year that he missed most after, you know, the one, what was that, 2017 that he missed almost all of the season. So
I'll take the over. I think that he'll push. So they're saying the All-Star break is when he'll be back.
They, I mean, they've said June, so that's...
Yeah, so I would say, my guess would be, like, especially based on, again, like, it's not, like, good to scout. I'm not a pro scout, and I don't trust my eyes on Instagram anyway, but he is, like, throwing hard off a mound and has been for a month or two, you know? So I don't know. I would imagine he, unless there's a setback, he does come back by June, and so I would take the over on that one.
I think he's using that pitching ninja filter on Instagram that's been out there that just makes your pitches look better. They're really not that good in person, but you
okay.
Know. Yeah. I know.
You should tell that to him.
I wish I could have a conversation with Noah in person. I'm with you on. I think it's over. I picked starts because I thought innings was going to be too tough to nail down a number. I think it'll be more than 10.5 starts. I think there are going to be a couple of like purposefully short starts mm-hmm. in there. It wouldn't yeah. surprise me if like his first start, he's basically going to go like 4 innings or, you know,
or
75
even less,
pitches.
You know, like, right, like just work him back in an opener role. Like I think especially since that's like the controlled environment, right, is giving you the first inning or the second inning, you know, first and second innings rather than like, oh, you know, we're going to work him in via the bullpen for 2 innings at a time or whatever.
Yeah, so I think he'll have, you know, I think he might be closer to 15 than he is to 10. But I don't know that that's going to translate into like 100-plus innings for the season.
Will David Peterson finish with a WAR, wins above replacement? You go with the Fangraphs number of over or under 1.7.
And I picked 1.7 because that was somehow... Rick Porcello's total from last year, which, you know, 1.7 in a 60-game season is very good.
A lot better than it looked.
Right. Probably not a great argument for WAR. I mean, that's a 4 yeah. WAR season.
That's a maybe a we year. Shouldn't trust this stat over a 60-game season type of thing.
Peterson's was I think, like 0.5. So he would not have gotten to 1.7 off of last year's pace. If it were 162 games.
And it's weird with pitchers. The Fangraphs WAR and the Baseball Reference WAR differ so strongly with that because like it feels like the Fangraphs is so much more component-based and the Baseball Reference one is so much more results-based that I struggle with the difference there a lot. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, and like I think I use Fangraphs WAR most of the time, but I like the idea of Baseball Reference WAR being off of ERA versus mm-hmm. FIP because you
right.
get, you know.
This is what actually happened.
Right, because Porcello is a exhibit A for why you shouldn't use FIP necessarily. You know, the batted ball stuff all suggested his ERA was
well, yeah,
was
I mean, I think FIP is it's a useful stat to sort of predict whether a guy's success is going to last or not. But ultimately, a predictive stat or isn't. That's not what happened. That's just like what we projected might have more likely happened, you know, in these scenarios. It's ERA is for better or worse. It's that's what happened, you know, and like your goal is not to have the best FIP. Your goal is to limit runs. I don't know. I just feel like you should use the results for that. So like if that's the stat, I want to see the results. I don't know. That's me.
Yeah. And then my problem with Baseball Reference WAR is that I think in 2018, like Aaron Nola had a better WAR than DeGrom. when I thought it was pretty clear DeGrom was the better pitcher. I think last year, I don't know how it ended up, but Max Fried was leading in pitcher war for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't agree with that either. So that has some ballpark factors. It tries to get into how your defense plays behind you. None of these are perfect.
They're all good. You know, we're not like, I don't useful, think either of us is like not a, perfect. Someone who is down on the stat in general. I use it all the time, but it's like to me, it's like a back of the napkin type thing.
Right. With Peterson, I think just because you don't know how much he's going to start this year, because both of us are reasonably confident Syndergaard is going to be back part of the rotation for half the season, that means that Peterson's starts in the second half of the year probably tied to someone else not being able to start. So I don't know that he'll just have the innings to get to that high a win above replacement number, regardless of how well he pitches, really. I think, if he goes out and has the same kind of year as last year, with his ERA. His ERA was good last year. The secondary numbers were a little shaky, especially when he started walking guys later in the year.
Yeah.
But if he has that kind of year in terms of results, the Mets will jump all over that, even if it doesn't give the fancy wins above replacement the way they want.
Yeah, I would take the under on this because of the peripherals last year. I think Peterson has a bright future. He certainly looks like a major leaguer. I think that anyway, you look at the minor league stats, he's had some success, but it wasn't like an enormous amount of success. Like, one of these like rocket ship type prospect guys. To me, I just think there are so many pitchers in the back end mix. I don't think it's a matter of opportunity because, you mentioned Syndergaard coming back, but it's still a rotation with, Stroman, a guy who sat out last year and he's been largely healthy, but he has had some injuries. He had the horrible knee thing that happened a few years back. I mean, everybody gets injured, but Carrasco certainly is an injury risk, and Walker is an injury risk. So I kind of feel like the innings will be there for the Petersons and Lucchesis and Jordan Yamamoto's when they come. I just don't know that he is so distinctly better than Lucchesi or Yamamoto at this point that you can say like, oh, he's going to be getting all those starts. And so to me, it's probably an under.
Yeah. I liked, we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon, actually before Jacob DeGrom's start. So hopefully nothing noteworthy happens in that. But Luis Rojas on Tuesday, when asked about the fifth starter competition, said, it's still tight in camp. What I can share is that it's really tight and we've liked everyone, it's better than the inverse. If it's tight and you haven't liked anyone, that's probably a problem. I think Peterson has the leg up there, I think, over Lucchesi and Yamamoto. We'll see. Lucchesi will start for the Mets on Wednesday. I think that's an important one for him, given how Yamamoto has pitched. One of those two guys might be in the rotation alongside Peterson if Carrasco can't make that mm-hmm. first start. But I'm with you. I think there will be ample opportunities for those 6, 7, and 8 starters, even when Syndergaard is back, I think, to mix them in because of the innings stuff that we've talked about with guys coming off of a year where they didn't throw very much.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
All right, let's get to some of the fun ones so we can get to our reader questions. Home runs by a Mets pitcher, over under 0.5.
Yeah, this is, you know, the Mets.
Over. They, just say over. It's over. Jacob DeGrom's going to hit two home runs in one game, and he's going to pitch a shutout. And it's, everybody's going to say, like, that is the coolest thing that anyone has ever done.
Because you had what? So DeGrom hit one in 2019. Syndergaard hit one. Wheeler hit one. Mats hit two. He hit one in back-to-back games. Mm-hmm. But you don't have three of those guys. You do have Taijuan Walker, who hit one in Arizona a few years back. So, of course, I'm going to go over because it's what kind of spoil sport party pooper would I be if I said under on the home runs by a Mets pitcher?
Oh, someone's going to hit a home run.
You know, I would go... If we had said this at 9.5, I would have gone over.
Well, 9. Well, that's ridiculous. I'm trying to look up. How does Stroman hit? I feel like Stroman seems like he's an athlete, right? Like, can he hit?
I mean,
we furiously type to look up. Like, this is it. I guess this is. I'm sorry that I can't just, like, call up.
He's 4 for 38 lifetime.
So he's been bad. But he has not really had an opportunity, right? Because 2019 was the only time he's pitched in the National League.
And he does have a home run. He does have a career home run.
Look at that. So maybe, oh, yeah, that year he was 2 for 7 with a double and a homer. That's my guy. Okay. Yeah, they're going to hit a home run. Pitchers will hit a home run. Pitchers will hit two. Jacob DeGrom's going to hit two in a game. You can bet, yeah, someone, this is because it's the perfect type of thing to say that no one will remember if it doesn't happen, but when it does happen, people like Ted Berg, that guy's a genius. Number of different pitches Marcus Stroman throws at least one time this year, according to Brooks Baseball, over under 6.5.
Yeah, so Brooks Baseball, which is a great site to look at pitching breakdowns, has all of the different pitches that guys throw, and Stroman has 7 pitches on his chart. He's got the four-seam, the sinker, the changeup, the slider, the curveball, the cutter, and the slow curveball. He didn't throw the slow curve at all in 2019, but he did in 2018, and I've seen it in spring, so that would be 7 different pitches. Unless the slow curve is just the curve. I don't know if he's going to mix up the speeds with that. We know he's throwing the split changeup more than his old traditional changeup. He wants to throw the four-seam fastball more than he did in 2019 when he didn't throw it a lot. So it's basically just like, will he throw 7 different pitches at some point in the season? And I think the answer is yes.
Yeah, I think he can give us 8. I think he can pull out an 8th. And I love it. And it reminds me, just briefly, because it was, and I'll give it a shout out because it was on The Athletic. Did you read the story about Zach Greinke? It was a few people worked on it. They did. And there was a story that, like, Zach Greinke called out AJ Ellis and was like, hey, I think this is a good spot for a cutter. He's like, wait, you don't throw a cutter? He's like, yeah, but I know how. He just threw a cutter.
It is. Like, one of the things that just amazes me about pitchers, you've got guys like Greinke, like Stroman. people who know me will laugh because I loved watching Clay Buchholz when I covered the Red Sox because Buchholz was the same way. Like, Jason Veritek once put down the sign for a two-seam fastball and Buchholz didn't throw it. I think it was in his second start, in his no-hitter. Veritek just called for a two-seamer and Buchholz was like, well, he called for it, so I had to throw it, so I had to figure it out.
Nice.
And he just threw, like, a devastating two-seam sinker. It's amazing. Like, guys get drafted based off of, you talk about their stuff. Oh, you know,
oh, like what's like the plane like on Matt his curveball? And what's
you know
the,
he's yeah. got he's got a plus curveball already or a plus slider to go with the fastball, developing changeup. Every pitcher in high school or college is developing a changeup because they don't need it yet. And then they get to the major leagues, and over time they become completely different pitchers. Like, they scrap the slider and throw a curveball instead. They change the way they throw the changeup. They go from a four-seam guy to a two-seam guy or vice versa. And it's just, I feel like when we talk about prospects and scouting them, we shouldn't talk about individual pitches that much and just talk about things like delivery and mechanics, because that's how you get Jacob DeGrom.
Does, like, he throw that hard, and does he throw accurately? And, like, you know, right. like maybe we can figure out the rest, because that, to me, like, that's kind of the key.
And now you've got guys who are able to kind of design pitches that work off of each other, you know, more, with more intent than they were thinking of in the past. And that leads to Stroman like tinkering with his slider and his cutter the way he has the last couple of years, and then throwing that changeup off of it in a different fashion this year.
It's cool. I'm psyched for a whole year of Stroman. I hope he has a big year. He's a fun guy to watch. Taco Days, Taiwan Walker holds with the fan base in either Queens or Port St. Lucie over the next 2 years. Over under 0.5, an easy over, because I have a platform and I will use it to beat the drum until this happens.
Right. I mean, he was the one you went to was in spring training, right?
Yes. And so spring training is the right setting for that. And it would be tougher. It's spring training when you're not like the Mets spring training is much more an event than Diamondbacks spring training, which is kind of funny because Diamondbacks like that they're in their own market, but there weren't. It wasn't like it was a huge crowd. Like again, like I said in the first show, there wasn't a ton of people there. You know, it wasn't like a big event. I feel like the Mets would make more of a thing out of it for sure, because of the Mets, and because there would be like more of a fan scene in the parking lot and stuff. But yeah, I think they'll do it. I think that guy. Look, if you have a good taco recipe, it's like it's a responsibility to share it with the people. And Taiwan Walker seems like a man who knows that with great power comes great responsibility, right? To Spider-Man.
And you're playing for a team in Queens, which is known for its food, even more and so known than for New its York Spider-Man. Broadly. And known for Spider-Man, exactly. So really, I mean, again, this is another one where like the only people taking the under here would be curmudgeons. So I will take the under. Duke is not in the tournament. I am a curmudgeon.
I'm always reminded there because there was a time, and you were definitely not. It was definitely when you were on the Red Sox beat. This was a real thing that caused a minor stir among Mets fans, is that there was a free ice cream giveaway. It was like some, and it was the ice cream company. I don't think it was, you know, it was like a cross promotion where they gave ice cream out at the end, like at the end of the game, as Mets fans were walking out, there were just people, representatives of the ice cream company, handing people free ice cream. And Mets fans complained about it because they were like, why are you giving ice cream to my kid at 10 p.m.? I don't want to have ice cream. I don't want to be tempted with ice cream right now. I don't really like the way that they're doing the ice cream. They should have told me they were going to give me free ice cream, or else I wouldn't have bought ice cream in the park. And it was like, well, all these different complaints about the free ice cream. And that would be the people who don't want Ty Walker to have a taco day.
It is amazing as you get older to figure out what other people find worthy of complaining about in life.
Everything. And I'm with them because everything is terrible. Can we go to some reader questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
First one, and this is a silly one. I just want to give Mike a shout out for asking it. And because you're a New Jersey guy, I guess at some point I must have committed to tracking down the best Taylor ham egg and cheese sandwich in New Jersey. That does sound like something I would say I was hoping to do, and it is not something I have attempted to do. I do like a Taylor ham egg and cheese. The only place I can think of is a bagel place in Secaucus near MLB Network. That's pretty good. And if you look up where MLB Network Studios is and then look up the bagel place, that's the one. I don't know the name of it offhand. But other than that, I'm not an expert on this. First of all, are you from Taylor Ham or Pork World, New Jersey?
I was going to say, I don't know much about Taylor Ham. I'm from Pork Roll Country, but that makes me sound like I'm from South Jersey, which is certainly not the case.
You're from Central Jersey.
Yeah, the Pork Roll Taylor Ham line is relatively north in Jersey. And also, I'm not a big breakfast sandwich guy. I'm very much a cereal guy.
Okay. What's your cereal?
Like the one I eat most of the time, or the one that I wish I could eat all the time?
The one, I mean, everybody wants to eat Lucky Charms every day, but you can't do it.
Because mine is Fruity Pebbles. Then the one that I eat.
Such a bad cereal. Go on.
Someone's never had it with vanilla yogurt. It's amazing.
That's probably okay.
The one that I eat most of the time is like Quaker Oat Squares or different versions of Kashi cereal that say that because of the boxes don't have cartoon characters on them, I assume they're healthy for me, but they're probably not.
They're still covered in sugar, but like it's better stuff covered in sugar, I think. I have some Kashi myself. A real question. I mean, not that Mike's question is not a real one, and I'm sorry that I have not followed up on my promise to eat the best Taylor ham, egg, and cheese. There's only so much time, and I have two children. I'm just like, I would love, and he gave me a recommendation for a place, and I will do my best to check it out. It's not, as it turns out, not too far from the home of some people that I hang out with in New Jersey sometimes, so maybe I can make that trip to Maywood, New Jersey. I just, you know, I don't know. I don't know when it's going to happen because there's going to be kids in the car when I try to do that. So then it's just a lot of wild cards. The next one. Okay, this is from Matt. Matt wants to know. It seems like player development, player performance, and performance optimization have all sort of arrived at commonly accepted best practices. And it feels like most teams are trying to do the same things in these areas. Do you think there are any player skill sets or development approaches that are out of fashion but might be a new market inefficiency, like batter contact rate, simply above average starting pitching three times through the order, stellar base running, etc.? Or are we really at true best practices?
I don't think we're at true best practices because you look at like just how the game is played, and I don't think anyone thinks this is the best version of baseball right now.
Well, but it's different. Distinguish between best for winning and best for aesthetic baseball, because this is clearly
right,
not.
Yeah,
best
those are
baseball.
Different. I mean, I think you could have made an argument. Like, I think just we've seen the sport evolve so much, even in the last 7 or 8 years. I mean, you think of the way people built up, like the need for a huge bullpen. Like everyone needed bullpens. The way the Royals had their 2015 bullpen. The teams that have won the World Series lately have not had particularly good bullpens. I mean, the Nationals won the last full season. The team that won the World Series had, I believe, the worst bullpen in the National League and got through the whole season that way. And we've talked about it before. The teams that have done well in the playoffs lately have basically been using their starters as relievers. You go back to 2014 and 2015, and you had teams that did not hit home runs at all. In the Giants and Royals win the World Series. And now you have teams that basically only hit home runs competing for the World Series. I think the sport evolves quickly enough that whenever you think that you have kind of the formula for how to optimize different things, the sport will change. And it's probably, there's probably going to be a heavier hand from above, meaning the commissioner's office, in actively changing it. Whether that's deadening the baseball, changing certain rules regarding the shift or things like that we're seeing them experiment with in the minor leagues. You know, I think one change that would be interesting is if you modified the strike zone. I remember talking about this with someone in baseball years ago. Like I asked, how do you get more balls in play? And he said, if you just change the strike zone from being more of an up-down strike zone like it is now to being a wider strike zone, I believe he delightfully called it like a Tom Glavine strike zone, where you get like two balls off the plate. That puts guys into, they have to swing more often, but they're swinging at pitches they can make contact with. Like it's easier to make contact with a pitch that's off the plate away or off the plate in versus one that's up in the zone.
Right.
Yeah. So that he's like, that's one way you would get more contact. You'd get weaker contact. You get more, you know, ground balls to second base, but that gets the ball in play more often. And I've thought, like, if you did make that change, how it would change the way people pitch. If it's harder to get that high strike, guys lay off that more, and you pitch to contact more. Like, I'm really interested in seeing what Zach Wheeler does this year off of last year, where he, like, purposefully lowered his strikeout rate to get more balls in play. And then at the end of the season, struck out a lot of guys anyway. So it's interesting to see how pitchers react to the changes in the game that way, and guys go against the course. You know, the Royals in 2015 were really good because they put the ball in play against a team in the Mets that was used to striking a lot of guys out.
Right.
And that's why they were a particularly bad matchup for the Mets. So I'm never one to think that...
Defensively gifted World Series Mets, yeah.
They were not defensive geniuses then either, Sandy. I'm never one to think that like the problem has been solved and now we're all just working toward the same thing, because I think we've moved a lot more in that direction.
As soon as you know what the thing is, someone is working to defeat it, right? So there's,
right.
You know, like, that's what's, I think it's cool. It's like, it's happening way faster now, I think, than it ever did before. But like even just over the course of the last like 20 years, it was like, hey, did you know ground balls for a pitcher are just as good as strikeouts? And then you got all these ground ball guys. And, you know, it was like, and then guys adjusted their, and then all of a sudden it was like, wait, how did Justin Turner start hitting home runs? And Daniel Murphy was like, oh, well, everybody's, you know, if guys are trying to work low and throw the ball on a downward plane, turns out if you meet it on that plane, you're going to have a home run. And then everybody figured that out. And then he said, okay, no, we're not going to throw the sinkers anymore. We're going to throw the fastballs. At, you know, it just sort of constantly changes and evolves. I think that to me, there's still like a frontier in pitcher health that has to be unlocked and that teams are probably working on. It's an interesting one because there's like a sort of a privacy and like HIPAA aspect to it, right? Like that, because one of the big things is that you could have wearable tech, you know, and these, mm-hmm. these things exist where, you know, that monitor a pitcher's arm angle and pulse rate and whatever else, every other aspect of it, which might be, you know, show when he's tiring. And I think a lot of pitchers are rightfully sheepish about putting them on, you know, because I don't think you want your team to know every bit about that. You know, I don't know. It's, you know, and I don't know the extent to which that's being done places and, you know, how much a say in it a minor leaguer might have. But it strikes me that in baseball history, there have been a number of like magic arms. And like, I would think of like Nolan Ryan, like there, something about Nolan Ryan's arm had to have been like magic. He just, that guy could throw 300 innings a year. He would walk 150 batters and strike out 370. It was like, if you look at some of the games, this guy had to have thrown like 220 pitches in this game and still came back 4 days later and pitched. And so I wonder, it's just, I guess it kind of makes me sad that to think that like there's some guy out there with a magic arm and he's only going to be able to throw 160 innings a year because they're, you know, teams are rightfully cautious with pitchers. And so I kind of hope that someone unlocks the secret to like, when is a pitcher going to go and what pitcher can we say confidently is not going to get injured and let loose? Because think of how fun it would be to watch Jacob DeGrom throw like a 300 inning season, you know, or if you could get Jacob DeGrom every 4 days every 4 days instead of every 5 days. Would be pretty cool. It would be pretty cool. I'm not saying it's DeGrom. I'm just saying like there is a guy out there who can handle a much larger workload than any pitcher is going to get in 2021 in Major League Baseball. And it will be cool if one team can, in some like ethically responsible way, determine who that guy is.
Yeah, like I remember it might have been the same conversation with the same person as the strike zone one I was just talking about, asking like, you know, is there someone in the major leagues today who could throw 300 innings if you built them up? And he said, like, sure, yeah, there's probably a few. There's probably a lot of guys you'd get hurt trying to do that.
Right, and that's the thing. And if you look back at, like, the 1890s guys, you're like, wow, this guy threw 600 innings for four straight years. And then he died, you know? It's like, then he's like, it's like, oh, then he's like, his arm literally fell off. Like, poor overall is slain on the ground from too many pitches or whatever.
Yeah, like, there's such a survivor's bias to the talk about like why, you know, these guys can't throw it the way Nolan Ryan could. It's like no one else could. Nolan Ryan, I had to look this up because it's my favorite Nolan Ryan pitching line from 1974.
The game against Louis Tiant?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
Against Boston, 13 innings. Yeah, it's against Tiant. 13 innings, 8 hits, 3 runs, 10 walks, 19 strikeouts.
Yeah, that's
1 million pitches.
How many pitches did he throw? Yeah, yeah, it's unbelievable. And like, and Ryan, I remember like from, you know, when I my youth, like he was in his 40s, like his late mid 40s, and he was still throwing the 90s late in games. Like it would be the ninth inning, and he's throwing 95, and he's like a 44-year-old man. It was nuts.
I mean, he worked through that lineup 6+ times. He got a 7th turn in the lineup. Right.
You're probably not gonna see a guy go 13 anymore.
Yeah, that. I mean, it's amazing when there's a guy who like you can contemplate pitching the 10th. You know, like that.
I mean, it's so rare. You know, it's just so rare. Yeah. But it's good. I mean, it's something to think about. Tim, I have so many things to do this afternoon, and I feel like we've covered a whole lot of ground here.
Good luck to your Hoyas against Colorado.
Best of luck.
It's a popular 12-5, yeah.
So Coach K couldn't allow himself to go to the NIT, I assume.
Well, I mean, who wouldn't want to spend a week or two in Frisco, Texas, in March during a pandemic. You know,
look, there are a lot of programs out there that are proud to have the winning record necessary to make the NIT tournament. So let's not knock it.
Yeah, it would have been fun to see how they reacted to the NIT in a normal circumstance. I think they probably would have turned it down in that case too, which would have been a mistake.
Pride, the hubris.
But yeah, they share the hubris with Seton Hall and St. John's and other local programs that have decided against a week in Frisco.
It probably makes sense. Tim, thank you so much. Thank you so much also at home for listening. If you enjoyed this show, please rate us and review us on iTunes or anywhere else you can rate and review podcasts. You can get in touch and ask us a question you can email me at asktedberg@gmail.com. Tim is on Twitter at Tim Britton. I am on Twitter at OG Ted Berg. The Mets are playing spring training games, and we will be back with way more next week. Tim, peace out.
Adios.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.